It's that time of year again, Halloween season. On Blood and Black Rum Podcast, we take this very seriously. So, we're going back to the basics with what we're calling Halloweenies 2. Movies that take place on or around Halloween. Your favorites like Hocus Pocus, Ernest Scared Stupid, Terrifier, and more. Tune in all September and October as we smash jack-o'-lanterns and Oktoberfest in equal fashion.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from cosplaytation.com, and I'm joined with my spooky co-host, Martin.
What's going?
Which, by the way, I'm proud of you. You, for some reason, decided for like all of 80s action months not to say, hey guys. You're like, hello friends. Like, you're Jim Nance.
I'm trying something new, but yeah, I gotta go back to it. Gotta go back to the roots for this one.
Right, true.
That's right. And you know what? It's that time of year, the time of year where we plow through movies in the span of 2 months, getting through. This year, it's going to be 9 movies, I believe.
Big load.
And if the theme that I'm going to play, it's not on right now for us doing the podcast, but it will be. I'll put it in. The editing magic, I'm going to put it into the background of the episode. We got the spooky Halloween music playing as well. So all the cackles and chains, it's all there for your listening pleasure as we talk about the greatest time of year, Halloween.
It's okay.
It's not okay. Just okay. It's the greatest time of year. It is the biggest holiday for the Blood and Black Rum Podcast, for one thing. We spend the most time on it. Probably the bulk of our episodes are Halloween episodes in some capacity. Besides Christmas. Christmas we do spend a lot of time on, too.
Those are the two, and they're right back to back. They're like the two periods that, I mean, back when we used to be a weekly podcast before, you'd be like, I'm too busy. You still muster it up for Halloween, Christmas.
That's right. And even our time off, when we came back, we did a Halloween special. That was what got us back into the studio.
Reanimated.
That's right. So this year, because we've been, the past couple years, we've been doing director-themed Halloween seasons. And so we kind of wanted to take a break from that, because it does kind of limit you as to what you can do. So sorry if you enjoyed our So Creepy It's, because we did So Creepy It's Carpenter, and then we did So, what did we call it? So
Craving Some Cronenberg.
Craving Some Cronenberg, because we did Wes Craven.
We doubled up.
That's right.
We doubled up. Gotta say, the Craving Some Cronenberg, it's not going to go ever really down in the annals of the greatness for me, because I just don't care for David Cronenberg's work. Love Wes Craven. But I don't crave the Cronenberg. But I think So Creepy It's Carpenter is some of our best work.
Probably, yeah.
Because we're pretty big John Carpenter marks. Like, we're going to, by the time we're done doing this podcast, we will, like, the last episode will probably be, like, the last Carpenter.
And have covered them all at some point. Yeah. And, so we were kind of burnt out on doing directors' works. So we decided that we were going to go back to square one, back to first season of this show, and we were going to cover some movies that actually take place on Halloween or around Halloween or have a big part of their scope be Halloween.
Fun fact, for if you haven't listened to like our original Halloween episode, wasn't even a theme. A rare top 5-15 list of our horror movies for Halloween.
Yep.
That's the only list episode we've ever done.
That's right, yeah. We kind of went through them all. Now we tend to tackle one movie at a time, but back then we did a lot of different things. And yeah, we went through our list of movies that we thought were perfect for Halloween. And this, you know, so instead is a change up where we did a season 2 on all of Halloween, literally the Halloween movies. all the whole series. So that also kind of counts. But this time, we're calling this one Halloweenies 2, because I'm counting those previous episodes as parts of our Halloween season. And this time, we're going to go back to movies that actually take place on Halloween, because I feel like that does really, for me at least, is very nostalgic, because I do love during the Halloween season actually watching movies that take place on Halloween. There's just something about it gives off that nice atmosphere that you really like for Halloween.
That's an ongoing theme when it comes to our Halloween reviews, is Ryan bitching about how un-Halloween a film is.
It's true.
If you watch the movie Halloween, there ain't a goddamn bit of Halloween there. No leaves or anything, really. It's just some asshole running around in a mechanic suit in California.
And yeah, I mean, it is a big deal for me to not have to have a movie that takes place on Halloween and not have much Halloween in it. Scream 6 is a big offender of that one that we talked about when we did that episode.
But it's in New York City, so it's different.
It's okay, yeah. They go to a convenience store, so it's okay.
I'm still mad Aki wasn't in it, because that was like the perfect opportunity when he was still like big on, I don't know if he's still as big on the TikToks, but have him be like, oh man, get the Aki way, and then, you know, Ghostface take him out.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but
you never seen like those TikToks of the guy like down at the bodega down the city, like, yo, make it the Aki way, and he's like, sure, and then he, you know, makes this ridiculous sandwich with like Fruit Loops and eggs and all this other bullshit.
Nope.
Yeah.
No idea that. About it.
But that was like a thing back years ago.
So for Halloweenies, not even gonna respond to that. I don't even know. I'm not with the program on the TikToks there.
I'm not either.
For Halloweenies 2, I want to name it Halloweenie because if you've never seen it, The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Which fun fact? I have all of that player soundtrack on my Spotify.
There you go. It's a great soundtrack. They did an episode in season 2 called Halloweenie. And it's a great episode. I've probably watched it a few times after it aired, you know, just as a Halloween seasonal favorite. So that's where you're getting this from. Real throwback to The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
30 years old. 30 years ago.
I know. It's a little sad. sad now to think about it, but yeah. And so, again, this is a loose running theme. So we've got a lot of different types of movies for this season.
Well, we're going to have a little fun this time. There's going to be some fun movies this time.
Fun movies, movies that some of us haven't seen before. A lot of variation, which is kind of nice. You get a lot of variation and different things that you can do with movies that take place on Halloween. Some kids movies, technically. Some adult movies, horror movies, comedies, you name it. We're going to cover a lot of different things. And the first one that we got for this week, starting it off, is one that I wanted to revisit because I've seen it previously and I had thought that it was kind of interesting. And now that I think about it, I'm not sure if I thought it was interesting because I watched them back to back or what, but whatever the case, this movie has a sequel as well. And I watched them both around the same time, like in a Halloween season. And I thought they were kind of interesting. And it'll be interesting for me to revisit my thoughts on it now that we've seen it, that I've seen it again. The movie is called The House is October Built, and it was released in 2013.
Looks like it
2014
was
area.
Looks like it was filmed in 2008.
Yeah, it definitely does. It has that early 2010s.
Poster screams James Wan, The Conjuring, please give us money.
It's kind of true. It's got one of those direct-to-video style poster artwork / DVD covers, which probably is not far off the case from this movie. The House That October Built is a movie that kind of stuck out to me at the time because when I watched it, I thought it was kind of interesting that it tackles the idea of a haunted house, and not in the sense of a paranormal, supernatural haunted house. Haunted house in terms of those houses that you visit for Halloween to be scared. Otherwise known in the industry, which in this bothers Martin, they're called haunts.
Ridiculous.
Right? And Martin was, he was watching this movie, and he was noting that they just kept calling these haunted houses haunts. And he's like, that's such a stupid term. I don't know where they got that from.
Yo, let's go down to the local haunt, yo.
And I was like, I had to break it to him. I said, in the industry, because I'm an industry, I'm in the know of the industry. I've worked in the industry, of course. In the industry, they do call them haunts. That's what the term is.
Stupid.
And so, yeah, I had to break it to Martin that that's actually what they use as a term.
Somebody's been hanging on Fangoria a little too much. Yo, let's go down to the haunt. Local haunt. No one's ever said that. No one's ever been like, yo, let's go down to the haunt. So yeah, let's go to the haunted house.
It's true. I mean, maybe they took to using that at a certain point, because now you say haunted house and people think you mean, oh, you're going to literally a haunted house. So you're going to go
like if
investigate
you,
ghosts.
Like if you were to say that, like if you were like, hey, let's go down to the haunt. I'm like, oh, I thought you wanted to go down to the haunted house. I'm going to pass now. Because you sound like an asshole.
Like I would have checked it out. But because you had to use now, the industry term and I'm part of a union, I will not be going.
You just sound like an asshole now.
It's a good question. Do these haunted houses, do they have unions, you think?
Well, with the new labor passage for unionization, it's easier than ever. So thank God.
It's like Union Group 666 for the haunts. Something like that.
Teamster 666 going out for the spooky skit. Where's Mr. Pro's Sunday Scaries, Tim Heidecker?
That's right. Yeah, I could just see the labor board sitting down with the you know, the union rep, and like, you know what's really fucking horrifying? Our wages. So many puns that they could pull out there.
These hours I work are spooky.
This salary is a ghost of what it once was. Be great. I want to sit in on it. If anybody's listening in the haunt industry, invite this to your next union rep meeting.
It's Labor Day's coming up.
That's right. So anyway.
That's a dump, a good pun.
The house is October Bell. You've never seen it before, right?
I haven't even heard of it before, right?
It's an odd name, to be honest with you.
It's like the Hunt for Red October. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just waiting for Sean Connery to pop up.
It's definitely an... Like, the name itself is very odd. And, I mean, it's almost like someone was thinking they were, like, Emily Dickinson or something. They're like, the house is October built. The leaves toiling across the lawn. It's an interesting name, though.
It would make more sense if this was, like, how it kind of introduces itself as, like, a documentary. But for what the premise they're going for, it doesn't really totally connect.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good name. I think it's a good name, but, I mean, it does kind of, like, it would... If you were going in blind, you'd be like, so what's this supposed to be?
Yeah. All right, let's take a break real quick before we get into it. Talk about the beer that we got on the show. And of course, in true Halloween fashion, October fashion, you know, it's September. We're starting off with an Oktoberfest. And this is actually one that we've wanted to do for, or at least I've wanted to have for a while. Because as you know, Sloop Brewing is one of my, you know, one of my favorite beer producers. And so I finally was able to find the Sloop Oktoberfest. And I grabbed it real quick because normally either it comes and goes or we don't get it out here. So
I think this past 2 years we didn't get it because we would have been on it. Because up until this year, we've averaged like 4 or 5 Sloop beers a year on the podcast.
It's true.
They're our favorite little fish-killed brewery.
That's right. So this one has a very reminiscent can of Jenny's Oktoberfest, Genesee Brewing Company's Oktoberfest, because it does have that nice blue and white diamond pattern, whatever.
Yes, Bavarian.
Bavarian flag pattern. And this one is what I would consider a Marzen style. So we've had this discussion before on the show, the difference between Marzen and Fest beer. Fest beer, less malty,
more vegetable.
Yep, more of a German light style Swiss beer.
Dry.
Yep. Marzen, American, more Americanized version, maltier, heavier. I would say
the traditional style that the forefathers have forsaken because they hate the fatherland.
Well, it's true. So I would say Sloop adheres more towards the Marzen style. This one is definitely has a heavier malt base to it. You're definitely going to get a lot of malt to it. A little bit darker than your normal Fest beer style. Pretty standard Marzen, I would say. It's not really that different or outlandish for a Marzen style Oktoberfest. And I would say I like it quite a bit. I think it's a pretty solid Oktoberfest beer. You know, I wouldn't say that it's probably the best Oktoberfest that I've had, but it definitely hits the style that I do like quite a bit about the Oktoberfest. I like that nice malty breadiness to it. Light notes of caramel. I think it really manages that quite well. And I enjoy it. I'd probably give this, I think I gave this like a 4 out of 5 on Untappd. So I like Sloop's Oktoberfest. I'm glad I found it. What do you think?
I'm glad we got it too. It is, I hate to say it, it is kind of bog standard for a Marzen style. But we're lucky enough to, for the most part, for the Marzens that we do get around here to be, even if they are bog standard, great, and to be very good. This does hit every note that we would like to see in a Marzen style for the season. It's biscuity, it's got carameliness to it, a little bready, little bit of the hop bitterness there. It's got a nice dark body to it, crisp, easy to drink, but it is filling. You know, it's nice malty breadiness. Very good. Clean. The one thing, and as I'm having the second one, it's not as pronounceable, so maybe it's because I've had two. First couple of times drinking it, it did have a little bit of an adjuncty taste to it. Don't know if that was just like the remnants in it or like can kind of bleeding into it. But this is a very good Marzen style Oktoberfest. I like it a lot. I would definitely buy it. You know, it's rare for us to say that it's rare for us to say that there's Marzens that we've had that we don't enjoy. I would definitely probably, if I saw it out in the wild and it was during this beautiful season where the temperature's just starting to plummet and starting to get nice and crisp and fally, I would definitely get it to warm my spirits up because it's great. I would probably say it's like, I'll probably end up giving it like a 4, but I'd say it's like a 3.9. But Untappd's not going to let me rate that.
If you buy Untappd Premium, it will.
Oh!
Yeah, you can do, like, crazy point values to it, yeah.
Well, I mean, like, so, I mean, it is, you know, if you like Marzen styles and you have an expectation of what that style of Oktoberfest has to offer, you're going to enjoy this greatly.
Yeah.
I don't know what your price point was on it. Maybe
It's actually not too bad. For a six-pack, I think it was like $14.99 or something.
That's still bastardly levels.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't terrible, though. I was definitely expecting more. I think even last year when I bought Thin Man Brewing's Oktoberfest, which only came in a four-pack, it was probably around the same price. So I definitely thought it wasn't too bad of a price for what you're getting from it. Obviously, again, Oktoberfest styles tend to be a little less pricey when it comes to like ingredients, but you know, at the same time, I can appreciate a good Oktoberfest, so I'll pay it. And like you said, you bring up a good point. There are very few Oktoberfests that I can even think of off the top of my head where I was like, I would never get that Oktoberfest again.
The only one
I can think of off the top of the head that I think we both agreed was kind of very middling was Narragansett's,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of to be a little expected because their styles are so hit or miss. And the Jack Sabby's Copper Legend, which I know is, maybe it's for me, but I know it's like a revered Marzen. And I didn't care for it at all. I think you didn't care for it either. But those are like the only two that come to mind.
And Yingling.
Yeah. Yingling did come to mind. The one that I'm on the lookout for again is that fucking Snyder's one, Pretzel Oktoberfest. That one was surprisingly delicious.
The Snyder's hard pretzel soft pretzel with Octo. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
I think they only did that one year, though. That's,
I know. And you know what? At our local beer store, I have seen it again, and I would say, that's poison. That's toxic. I know what year that was from, and I am not buying that again.
Even though our friend gave you a, like, 2017 Darktoberfest, and you're like, I have to.
Well, there's a difference. That was a free beer. Sure, I'll give it a shot. I'm not going to just immediately sink for it. But I'm not going to go out of my way to buy one for myself.
It's like, we should really start a letter campaign, though, to Bix. Dear FX Matt Brewing, why won't you bring back Darktoberfest?
It's true.
Like, you make a damn good Oktoberfest. So why not bring back the Darktoberfest?
Just do it. We need the Darktoberfest in our life again. I know.
And White Ivy.
And we must also question, why aren't others as upset that the Darktoberfest has not been made again?
Who didn't think to kind of combine like a Schwartz beer and an Oktoberfest?
I know.
That's literally, like, well, it's the same thing, reason why I don't understand how black IPAs still exist in this world, but white IPAs don't. There's nothing appealing about a black or red IPA, but the white IPA came and went with 2012, so.
That's true.
So while you get ready to introduce us to what's going on for our film, I'm going to go grab a Miller High Life.
All right, no problem. I'll lead us in. So the house is October built, 2013/2014 movie. Is a movie that does have quite a bit of Halloween in it, even though technically I wouldn't say that there is a lot of Halloween festivities or decorations or anything like that going on. Not in the normal sense where I would point that out. Instead, the whole film takes place around the Halloween time period. I think it initially starts like maybe 7 or 6 days prior to Halloween, and then it leads up to Halloween when the film's conclusion actually takes place on Halloween. So
happy Halloween.
That's right. And that's kind of how it gets us into the Halloween spirit. Like I was saying, it's just not as, it's not like explicitly Halloween most of the time. You know, it's not like you're going to see like jack-o'-lanterns on every stoop and stuff like that. But it does have a good dose of the atmosphere of Halloween. And the film is a pseudo-documentary. It's made in the found footage style of this group of people.
Which by 2014 has really, really, you know, been worn out.
Well, even on the box of this and the poster, it says from the producer of Paranormal Activity. So at the time, you know, Paranormal Activity, I wouldn't say it was worn out, but it definitely was like the thing to do at that time. Like if you were making
I think by 2014, it's definitely run because Paranormal Activity was what, 08, 09, 09.
Yeah, I mean, there was still a pretty big, and even still, there's still a pretty big found footage style. I don't know, like it's still pretty popular. And 2013, 2014, you're right, is probably a little bit on the cusp of when people were trying to turn away from that.
And sorry, 07 is when the original Paranormal
came. Yeah, so even earlier. But like, I think what the House that October Built is trying to do is set up that documentary style, but at the same time, it's trying to capitalize on this idea that was actually coming out at the time, probably spread around internet sites like Reddit, where people were recognizing McCamey Manor as this thing that had cropped up, that people, it had like this almost urban legend style following behind it, where this guy, McCamey, he would basically try to find people who wanted to go into the most extreme type of what he would call a haunted house. But basically, all it was a guy who really got it, not even just a guy, but a group of people who really got off on psychologically and emotionally and sometimes physically torturing people. And so McCamey Manor was billed as this sort of like extreme haunt where people could go and experience the most disturbing haunt that you could think of. But when you really get down to it, McCamey Manor is nothing more than just being, I guess, willingly psychologically and physically tortured for however long they felt like it. So there's lots of different forum posts about McCamey Manor, lots of different people saying that they went through it and what they experienced while they went through it. And to be honest with you, none of it is actually what you would consider an extreme haunt. So I think that what the House's October Built was trying to do was to show in a similar manner people who wanted to experience the extremity of haunted houses. And instead, what they got was literal violence that they didn't anticipate. Because I think the film tries to go into the idea that there's a difference between extreme haunts where you know what you're signing up for. You know that you're like, okay, maybe they're going to scare me. Maybe they're going to like jump out and make me, feel like I'm literally in danger, but there won't be any threat of actual danger. But what actually happens is that there is constantly a threat of actual danger, and you don't really know what's real and what's, you know, just part of the haunt anymore. And I feel like it's really a commentary on that sort of style of extreme haunt that McCamey Manor really came out with and tried to, you know, say is a normal part of extreme haunts, and it's not. So I think that's really what you get from the House that October Built. And so thinking about that idea of it being a sort of a commentary on McCamey Manor, I liked the idea of what it shows, is that these people are on a search for the most extreme haunts, and they kind of get into things that they weren't expecting were actually going to happen to them. So basically, the documentary starts off and they're, you know, kind of interviewing people about the haunts, and we see a bunch of interviews where people are just saying like, you know what, I don't doubt that there are probably extremities to the haunted houses that you don't know about. Like, maybe they use dead bodies in their haunted house. Maybe the people that they hire are not background checked, you know, stuff like that. So it already sets up that idea that like, well, maybe we're going to see some people who are into some really fucked up shit. What do you think about that? Like the whole idea where they interview people and kind of get like, it's supposed to be like, you know, cinema realité of like actual on the site interviews of people.
I think the documentary style works the best. I think it's a little sad that it's kind of abandoned after like the first part. Because at first it's kind of portrayed as like an actual documentary. But as we go on, it's these characters kind of asking people questions. So it kind of, at least for me, kind of loses any gravitas to it. I think it's an interesting idea, but because I'm not somebody who's connected to the horror community, this whole idea of like, I'm going to track down the spookiest spook house in all the world, take an RV trip, is like the fucking stupidest idea ever, where it's like, I can't believe you convinced your friends to go on this fucking road trip to, stupid... follow the iPads, big giant skulls, like they're like a Mario level, to find the scariest in all the Southwest, Southeast, or whatever the fuck.
What privilege that they have to just like basically up and leave for 7 days, traveling across the Southwest.
Also, these kids too look like they're 45 years old. So that's not also helpful. They all look like. Like, oh, I'm a 20-year-old college student, and they all look like, I've been paying my taxes and for 25 years.
It's true. They definitely look a little bit older. Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense when you think about it from the perspective that, like, they're making a documentary. So, if like, this is their job. If their job is to make documentaries, and they're, like, have this idea, and they're like, let's find... extreme haunted houses, because you know it's not outside the realm. If you look at the Travel Channel, they constantly during Halloween they're airing like the most extreme haunted houses, you know, and by extreme it's just like, you know, regular haunted houses, but it's not outside the scope of stuff that would be on the Travel Channel or TLC during Halloween, where they'd be like covering all of these types of haunted houses that, you know, I can just see like Mark Summers doing a
hang out.
Like, so, yeah, basically. You'll never believe what's
going on.
I know. For me, it doesn't stretch the scope of reality for me to think of them like traveling and doing a documentary about it. But the film doesn't really go into a good explanation of like why they're doing it. It just kind of says like, these guys are interested in haunted houses. We're going to make a movie.
Not even. The one guy, Zach, is like, I give a shit about this. Everyone else is like, okay.
Yeah, everyone else is kind of like acting like they're just barely tolerating the idea. They're like, fucking Zach, all right, I'll spend my next 7 days for Halloween tracking down these haunted houses. Because even like,
I brought my fresh off the boat hat so y'all know that I'm a cool buff guy, Irish looking guy. Huh?
I mean, the only other one that really seems somewhat into it is Bobby. You know, the camera guy, Bobby. He seems like he might be a little bit into it. Because they do talk about how they want to do, like, the most extreme ones. And some of them are... like, Brandy basically seems like she's taken against her will. They basically are just like, Brandy, you're with us. Part of the guy group.
She went for the train. Don't you? That's the thing, though. It's funny. Like in these films, there's always like five guys and one girlfriend that's like, "Yeah, I'll go for the ride. Let's go." One of the boys.
One of my favorite parts too, like when that comes up, is when they go to the fucking haunted house strip club. They're like, "Yeah, guys, you guys are gonna love it. We're going to this haunted house strip club." And the film takes a lot of chances to show Brandy's face, like just looking disgusted, like this is fucking terrible. Just having a horrible time at this haunted house strip club.
Well, a mid-2000s, late-2000s strip club does sound like a terrible time, because the underwear that they're wearing is like, literally, like, they're just ass cracks hanging. It's like, you're not even wearing anything. What's the point?
So you would say no to a liquor titty sandwich that they do, like, in that one scene where he's, like, basically, like, sandwiching them their nipples together while they pour liquor off of them?
Yes, absolutely. It's a terrible, terrible place to be.
At least the liquor is killing any bacteria. Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, it's just funny. Like, because Brandy definitely seems to be, like, the most disgusted one of the group. Doesn't really care about it. Actually actively dislikes later on throughout the movie. Like, the first haunted houses she kind of likes, right? They're kind of scary in a normal sense of a haunted house. You go in, there are guys hanging out.
The second
follow you.
The second one's awful because of how they film it. Because it's got the strobe light going, so you can't really see what the fuck's going on. So there's like 15 minutes of them going through that second haunted house where it's like, I don't know what's going on because the strobe light's going off 24/7.
It's true. It's kind of like when you see like those, if you go on YouTube and you're like, somebody's posted a home video of like going through this haunted house and you literally can't see shit throughout the whole thing.
All you need is like Derude Sandstorm to be playing like...
So, well, this movie too has the pretty generic like Rob Zombie-esque directorial style of, you know, every time you have a haunted house, there's got to be like nu metal playing in the background.
Like
no name nu metal.
The best part about like these haunted houses, that first one that they go to, and on the sign you see "Welcome to the Haunt House." It's like, that's the name of the haunted house you're going to. The haunt house. Well, this is fucking creepy, dude.
I mean, to a certain extent, I can relate because I do like haunts. I'll refer to it in the term that you dislike. I do like haunts. It's been a while since I've been to one, actually. But I have good memories of going to them when I was a kid and actually being, you know, fairly scared. And there was a really good haunt that they would do a few years in a row back when I was younger. And it was pretty elaborate, and it was put on by, Johnstown, the high school that's in our area. And it was elaborate. I remember at one point there was like a fucking slide. Like you would slide down from the second story to the first story. It was elaborate and it was really cool. And when you accomplish some of those really cool haunts, I think that is something that sticks with you because you kind of remember it as like a fun, scary time. And to me, like there are some memories that are really just stuck in my head of going to these types of haunted houses. And I think that's something that stands out to me nostalgically about this movie, and in particular like Halloween, is that it's a really cool time for that type of atmosphere. And I think that the film kind of lands on that, at least for the first few haunts, when it goes, you know, through them, is that they could be really fun. People really like those types of haunts, and it showcases the things that people really like about that sort of atmosphere. So I think they do that really well. And a lot of times the film does play out in itself almost like a haunted house or like a dark ride, because of the way that the documentary style is shot. So I appreciate that. I do agree the second house is difficult to see, and sometimes it suffers from the handheld issue of camera work, which is that you constantly are bombarded with actual atmosphere to put yourself in the reality, and sometimes it means that's too dark, you can't see anything.
Not like that too, the whole idea of this guy walking around like a film school camera.
Yeah, the whole setup.
Like instead of like an actual like camcorder, you know, that which would be more practical, especially by 2008, like
there's like a small like one with like a window, right? Like a normal camcorder window that folds out.
Like a nice small, like, you know, not this giant fucking contraption. Because, like, it's kind of funny to think about, because sometimes at work I have to use a digital camera, and I pun it out. It's like, I have to kind of rethink of it. It's like, I haven't used one of these in like 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how the fuck? And it's like, zoom in and out. What's that? Oh, it's W and T for wide and tight. Anyway, like when my brain has to kind of jog that back, like, oh, yes, you can't just use your fucking fingers to zoom in and out. It's, wide and tight, like you're an actual fucking cameraman, like, you know. So, like, I mean, I get it because they throw in the line, like, oh, you failed film school, so, ha ha ha, you know. But at the same time, it's very contrived, because it's like, I know you haven't seen it yet, which one of these days we do have to do it, but it's like, Diary of the Dead, when, like, there's a bunch of shit going on, like, and why aren't you doing anything about it? It's like, I have to document. And the guy's just sitting there on his camera filming it instead of doing anything about it. Well, that's kind of like this film a little bit, too. It's like, why aren't you doing anything about what's going on? It's like...
Yeah.
My obsession.
I mean, this one doesn't have it to the as much of the extent, because it does have... It, like, kind of makes sense throughout. Like, they're going through a haunted house. You know, obviously, he's going to be scared, but not, you know, crapping himself, dropping the camera. Later on, it's not filmed by, you know, the normal crew. So it makes more sense, that I think, than what you're saying from Diary of the Dead. So I don't mind the documentary aspect of it. I do think that when it brings in some of, like, the music score that's supposed to, like, set up atmosphere, there is the question, and that's always the case with, like, these found footage type movies. There is always the question, like, well, who put this movie together? Right? Like, somebody put this together for consumption, for viewers to actually watch. So they put...
Rob Zombie did. So that's why you get... That's why you get to hear, yeah, my Durango, my little number five. Giving that deep, they're never gonna stop running.
So, like, in this film's case, you know, you're basically effectively... If you really take the realism of the film seriously, you're watching a snuff film towards the end of the movie, where somebody has decided, I'm going to put this whole documentary together as though it's a documentary, and then really fucking hit you over the head with it at the end of the film that, like, oh yeah, actually, you guys were murdered. Sorry. Sorry, should have warned you. These guys were murdered. And you're going to see it all. So somebody actually put it, you know, like, cut it together, edited it. And so, atmosphere to it.
With that being said, so what do you think about, like, the bait in the beginning where we get to see Brandy getting thrown into the trunk of a car and she's...
Yeah, it's actually... I probably could have done without that because it doesn't...
It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally preambling something that you already know is going to happen.
Do you think that takes away from the end? Because...
Yeah, because you know... Well, I mean... I think the way it would have worked the best is to find out that this is all a charade. Mm-hmm. Like it's April Fool's Day. Like, mm-hmm. Everything that happens is a charade. Like, they're not actually being buried alive. They're being made to feel that. Like, that intense, like, they're going to die because they were searching for the ultimate haunt to where they feel like their life's in jeopardy. I think the film would have been a lot more impactful if that's actually what happens at the end. Like, nothing's really happening to them. They're just, you know, and they let them out, like, ah, oh, see, nothing's going on. They, you know, gotcha. Yeah. But I think the fact that they're like, no, you're gonna get buried alive and killed, and that's how it's gonna end, definitely kind of softens the blow, because it's like, oh, that's the expectation, mm-hmm. And it's not really thrilling, you know, to watch that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's... And this might be ruining the second one a little bit for you, but in the second one, they actually do that retcon, and they're like, "Ha! Actually, it was all a joke. Like, it was all, you know, it was all actually the extreme haunt that you were looking for." And then, you know, it kind of goes from there to basically say that that's what happened in this movie, and maybe that's why I have more of a fond remembrance of this movie, because I am remembering the fact that they kind of retconned all that out and said, here's this kind of theme. It's like, be careful what you're looking for, because literally an extreme haunt like that that you're actually looking for can be, like, literally, you know, lifetime of trauma. You're asking for PTSD and you're gonna get it, you know, because there's a difference, I think, and I think that this movie misses that with the perspective that it basically just follows through on the fact that, no, actually, they were just hunted down by rogue haunted house men. People who are fucked up in the head and they heard that they wanted to have an extreme haunt, and they were just like, let's kill these guys off.
Playing the whole, like, Children of the Corn bit.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it from the perspective of just this movie, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, because they were just like, for no reason, these random guys from haunted houses were like, we don't like this documentary these folks are doing, these city folks are doing, so we're just going to kill them and then get it all on film for some reason. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I guess if you think about it from like a cartel perspective, like maybe.
Well, it just makes carnies creepy. Mm-hmm. Which carnies have never done themselves any favor. So it's already like, all right, carnies are already creepy, so let's make them creepier.
Yeah.
When he's like, oh yeah, where are these backwoods? He's like, what the fuck do you mean backwoods?
I mean, I think it does kind of do a disservice to itself, because it does set up like those stereotypes of like, we're in Louisiana, like you said, we're in Louisiana backwoods, and these fucks are redneck hillbillies and they do whatever they want back here. And it kind of sets up that like generic stereotype that you're right, you're already expecting. Like, you're expecting them to do that stereotype and then kind of like backtrack on it and do something a little bit different. But in the case of the ending of this film, they kind of just go through with it. And a lot of the ideas that it sets up, if you think about it from, again, like I said, it you don't know that the second one exists, where they backtrack on all of that, it doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense or even... I just don't think it like resonates very well, because I do think that there's more of a thematic element to saying, be careful what you're looking for. You know, you wanted an extreme haunt, you got one, and it was cartel shit. And, you know, unfortunately, people do like that kind of thing.
Which would make more sense, too, if they like kind of dug deeper into kind of exploring like this whole dark web bit,
mm-hmm.
which they don't really do. It's all just bullshit on forums and such,
mm-hmm.
Reddit and Facebook. But like, if you made it more like, which I'm having a hard time remembering. So I don't know, like, but if by like 2008, 2013, if like dark web stuff was like really like a thought out thing. So like, you could make it like, oh, yeah, like this blue skeleton, like it's the creepiest haunt in the world, and somewhere on the dark web, like you have to go through like 8 VPNs, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea. I think the idea of that they're stalked, they're on the web. I think the chat room element to it that is super dated, and I think it was even dated for 2014. To be honest with you,
well, we get in the beginning, like. We're on the World Wide Web, and it's like, I can very least tell by, like, your attire, it's 2008. Nobody has said that since 1990, so what do you, like, you know, it's like originally, like, when you're typing in, like, a web address, don't forget the www, or it's gonna give you woogie boogies, you know, so, like, at this point, it's like, yeah, we know this bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it's an interesting perspective. I think this movie could have been a lot darker, to be honest with you. I think it could have been, it could have really run with the idea of, like, the cartel element of the... Because if you think about it, probably the scariest thing, and the film does bring this up, the scariest thing is real life, and real life is, you know, the cartel, that you, is not, at least not for us, but for... people in Mexico, that's a fucking extremely terrifying perspective, that you could at any time be kidnapped by cartel, you go through a fucking hazing process where you need to join the cartel or else they're gonna murder you in various absolutely disgusting and horrific ways. That's real life. This movie kind of does it in a, I don't want to say comical sense, but it is more of a like a, It's goofier. The premise is goofier, you know, because you are subjected to things that just are kind of like not... I don't want to say creepy. I don't really find them creepy. Like, the whole thing where they turn on the lights to the RV and then all of a sudden there's like 50 guys out in front of their RV. Like, I don't really find that scary. I find that to be more like, wow, these guys are really organized. They were all able to assemble.
It's menacing, you know.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, I think it would have worked
better if it was going for the trick rather than the the treat. Because you expect the slasher element at the end.
Kind of, like, a lot of the build-up reminds me of Creep, because Creep did the same thing. It literally takes until, like, the very end for you to hit that stride on what's going on. Here's the same thing. Like, literally, all this momentum is being built up to last, like, 10 minutes. And I think with that being the case, for it to be, like, at the end to find out, like, they're all alive, be careful what you wish for. This is the scariest, you know, haunt you ever been on. Happy Halloween. Would have been a lot more impactful than them being buried alive at the end. Because at the end, you're kind of like, well, who gives a shit?
Because
for the most part, none of these guys are really likable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's some people I even forgot existed. Like, when the one guy was like, be quiet. Like, yeah, you're the only one that talks. No one's when Zach's, like, talking about, we gotta go to this hall, man. It's all that I want. It's all that I ever wanted. Guys are mean. And they're like, you're the only one that talks. No one said anything. It's like, that's right. It's like just him and Brandy. And then, like, Jeff Bald Guy disappears. 45-year-old man disappears. Oof. The bus driver. And it's like, oh, yeah, he's a guy, too, because you don't ever hear from him. Like, there's five people in this crew, and you're like, you hear from like two and a half of them. So it's kind of like, you don't have any investment in what's really going on. So for like, at the end for them to be all like, you know, either bludgeoned or buried alive, it doesn't really, who gives a shit?
Mm.
Especially at the end, because they're all like, oh, Brandy! We're gonna say Brandy! Oh. Her pussy's been promised to me since I was 14. Brandy!
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? What do you think about that? Because the film actually uses Brandy, I would say, somewhat misogynistically, in that
yes.
It's constantly threatening.
She can't be left.
Yeah, basically,
because she's a woman.
It's constant. Well, I mean, I understand it to a certain extent, but it's constantly like that threat of like, she could be raped at any time, you know. I guess it's trying to get that idea of like scariness of you don't know your fellow humans, but
well, not only that too, because they do talk about briefly when they're talking about them, they're like, oh, I had sex, and you're like, no, we didn't have sex, we made out. No, we didn't make it, it was just heavy pet. And then it's like everyone's like, you know, gives their quick little speech of like, haha, right. I touched Brandy too. That's why in our group of friends, five friends, there's four men and one Brandy.
We keep her around.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think I do find it like, a little bit gross because it's constantly like throwing that. It's like the woman in the fridge situation. It's like you're constantly like the threat of intended rape or violence towards a woman is there at all times. And it's like, it's going to happen throughout the movie. And then actually the focus tends to be on what's going to happen to Brandy. Yeah. Like
her in the bathroom and they're like, all, you know, and all Louisiana comes down like, hey, hey there, sweet cheeks. Welcome to the bathroom.
I do have to say too, speaking of Louisiana, I love Halloween and I love celebrating it, but Bourbon Street on Halloween looks like an absolute nightmare. Looks like mine.
I imagine Bourbon Street on any day looks fucking nightmare.
Honestly, like, it doesn't look fun to me. I'd love a Halloween parade for sure, but that many people just together in one area, just walking around drinking, sounds like a terrible time to me.
Listen, you need to wait till 10 years later when we have COVID in the least.
True.
I know. When Hollywood's pumping out COVID and climate change films, like Florida is about to be by another super hurricane called COVID 5.
No!
What did you think about your, because you're the horror buff, and even I, a non-horror buff, was able to point this out. On their second, well, Haunted House, well, third, maybe it was the second or third, I can't remember. But the one where they go to the shoot zombie paintballs. Also, again, let's plant this film firm in the late 2000s. Isn't that the most early, late 2000s? Jesus Christ. Late 2000s thing in the world. Paintballs and zombies. It's like Left 4 Dead, but like, let's go. What did you think about the whole... Have you ever seen a zombie shoot a gun?
Oh, yeah, I know. That's actually...
And not only that, I mean, can you name it in cinema history?
I mean, it's brought up on the IMDb page for trivia. But yeah, I mean, of course, Land of the Dead, for sure.
And Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
I was yelling at the TV, like, you fool, look. Land of the Dead's only been out for, well, like, I guess 9 years by that point. But the way the film is shot, it looks like it's shot in, like, 08. It's like, you fool, this film was literally just in theaters. It's the last thing George Romero was able to con into somebody to get, like, the big screen. And you're like,
Yeah. And actually, to be fair, probably, I want to say, like, 6 years ago when I went to my friend's wedding and, you know, it was basically all of the celebrations prior to that, we did have a chance to go to a zombie paintball farm or whatever.
God, that sounds...
We ended up going to see, the fuck was it? The Western movie with...
Buster Scruggs?
No. It was a remake Western. What the fuck was it called now?
True Grit?
Yeah, it was True Grit. The True Grit remake. Oh, you're right. We went to go see that instead.
That was a decade ago. Oh my god.
Yeah.
No, 15 years ago. Oh my god. Oh my god.
So, yeah.
Oh my god. Wait. So what are you going to see?
I think it was it the True Grit remake?
Yeah, 2010.
Was it 2010? No, it couldn't have been that then.
Yeah, True Grit.
No, it was fucking True Grit. You're right, it was fucking True Grit. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, we went to go see True Grit instead of going to zombie paintball. And that is a memory that I'll always regret. I wanted to fucking shoot zombies with paintball. You know what?
What a job! That's what I was thinking. What are you wearing to get? Because I don't know if any like it's falling out of fashion. Paintball is big back for us, you know, mid millennials. But
I was thinking that too.
Getting hit by a paintball sucks balls.
I don't think that.
So to get unloaded by like some Tippmann 98 custom. Just like firing 200 paintballs at you.
I know, like some fucking, you know, 0.09 guy, 0.09 blood alcohol guy that's just fucking unloading and you know, you're close to the car that's driving through. I know, what are they wearing? They wearing like a fucking whole suit of armor? I don't know. It sounds like a terrible job to me, honestly. Like I love scaring people. I love dressing up for Halloween, but I don't think I would want to be a zombie getting shot at by paintball.
No, there's not enough money in the world or padding. Like that just sounds like hell on earth. Like just getting annihilated. Like
it's like all right, just make yourself wide for these guys. We've got to please the customer.
Not only that, too. So, like, how much do you have to pay to get into that haunt house? Like, paintballs aren't cheap. Like, none of it, like, the CO2 to, like, fire that shit's not cheap. So, like, I paid $50 to go in the spook house. Yeah, it's not that.
I wouldn't even consider that a haunted house. Like, why do they even bother? It's not like there would be... any like extreme haunt in this situation.
It's like the haunted house we went to in 2008 where John McCain and Barack Obama were the spooks on the ride.
It's true.
Got to see John McCain straight talk express.
what so in terms of the creepy factor of this movie, what would you say it is? What, do you think it's creepy? Does it have creepy moments? What do you think?
It's like a 4. It's very mild. Because they blow them all on the end. And the stereotypical, like, I'm a doll, come to play. Play? I want to play. It's not creepy. The film's not really creepy at all.
Yeah, I mean...
I think the main problem is... And this is a found footage style film problem to begin with. Nobody knows how to act natural. So I think the fact that you know it's a found footage film and we're supposed to be scared and creeped out by certain things that are going on, the actors never help because they don't know what... Like, it's never natural. And that's the biggest problem with these type of...
Yeah, that's what I definitely noticed about this watch, is that a lot of times people didn't seem natural. Like, especially people at the bar, in the, you know, the Louisiana bar. You know,
if you're looking, you're looking for giggles, he'll be right here.
Yeah, it all seemed really over the top. And even some of the people that were, like, interviewed, you know, in quotation marks, you know, it's pretty funny when they do their pauses, because you can just tell it's just not well acted. Yeah. They're just like, all of a sudden they're like, oh, you thought they put dead bodies in the haunted house? Well, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, it's all delivered with like a very tongue-in-cheek sort of style that I don't think works that well for the realism of the movie.
You're missing Jonathan Frakes to show up. It's like, it's fiction.
Yeah, they're right.
Dead bodies in haunted houses? You've probably heard the urban legend. Is that fact or fiction?
Or fiction. We'll tell you after this commercial break.
That's fiction. We made it up. I don't know, but I mean, seriously, though, that is that's not just a knock against this film. That's a knock like, against all these type of films. Like, it's good in spirit and good in idea. Because, again, found footage definitely lends itself best to horror films. But because the fact that everything is wrote, everything is acted out, scripted. Unless you have, like, Meryl Streep and fucking Robert De Niro, you're not going to get, you know, realistic enough portrayal. So when you hear, like, somebody be like, what the hell's going on, man? Come on! What the hell's going on? Like, nobody feels like there's no real tension, because you can tell, like, what the hell, man? Come on! Put the light back up. Come on. Like, what's going on? Come on, man. Come on. Like, it's never, like, unless, like, again, like, they're Shakespearean thespian actors, like Patrick Stewart coming down from the hill, or, you know. And that does take away from, like, the creepiness back, because that's, like, a lot of the creepiness is in that. But because, and I'm not saying, like, these are poor performances, but I just didn't. I think the style itself, you have to be a fucking thespian to truly be able to pull off. And they're good, but they're not creepy. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think like probably the best part for me is when the girl with like the doll head comes into the RV and just like sits there, doesn't say anything. It's probably the coolest part. You know, it's not necessarily scary, but it's just kind of like an interesting portrayal of a character to just like go in and sit there for a while and then scream. Like, the film has kind of that problem that a lot of films have, though, where it will show you something and then cut out for a long time. And then you're just like, well, what did they do? You know, like, practically, what did they do about it?
Yeah. So why did Mike let her in? Like, we have someone for, like, fucking her in the ass from behind? Because he's the horny guy. So, like, how did he get her off the...
And apparently he's pretty good at it, too, because he's constantly seducing women, and we see that...
That lady in the fine leopard bra.
That's right. Or the woman that he brings into the RV, and, like, honestly, asking, like, very creepy leading questions, like...
How long is that tattoo?
Or he's like, oh, you've got a nice thong on. It's like, Jesus, dude.
Let me see.
So what do you think of the Haunt? So we were talking about briefly, but the Haunt Strip Club. That's like a Rob Zombie fucking wet dream right there. Going down to a strip club and being, everybody drinking, go, everyone number five. Never gonna stop me. Sherry Moon's gonna stop me. Sherry Moon's gonna stop me. Never gonna stop.
It's a really odd thing that I've never heard of before, but hey, maybe they exist. I don't know. It's just like a really
spooktacular, like, here's my boobs and ass, and
it's a very specific niche thing that I would expect is probably not that popular, but you know what, doing a quick search, there are a couple. I guess there's a haunted strip club in Portland, Oregon, which is called RIP City.
You said that wrong.
What?
Oregon.
But you know what? I don't know. Oh, you know what? And another great one that comes up on Google real quick is Dicky Wonka's Haunted Strip Club Factory. And that's also in Portland.
All I could think of was watching this is Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, where they go to the Hellbilly concert.
Yes.
So all I can think of is like, who's doing this? Like, again, like, that like time capsule of this is like, oh, 2009? Kids are all going to go down to the bar and watch rockabilly, but they're dressed up as zombies. Like, you know, you can imagine.
It's Brian Setzer, but he's playing zombie songs. You imagine how sad I would feel if I had to go for Halloween festivities. I had to go to the strip club for a haunted lap dance with fucking Red Label scotch. And I would feel real depressed.
So while we're doing this this year is going down to a haunted strip club and we're getting Black Label.
Can you imagine one of those in this area? That would be scary in itself. Just around here, in our local strip club. I've never been there, but...
It's not even open.
Not open anymore?
It hasn't been open in like 15 years.
Oh, right. Damn. Would have checked it out.
Well, we need to take this boo titty idea. I'll elevate it to a cause worth fighting for. So, I think that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got. We talked about pretty much all of it that I had to say.
So on a scale.
Oh, you got a scale? Okay.
1 to 10. Bourbon Street titties.
Yeah, I was thinking that. This is pretty funny. He's like, show me your titties. And then he does, and he's like, thank you. Thanks for that.
It's not even Mardi Gras. He's like, hey, you, are you showing me your boobies? It's like Joe Dirt, like, show me them there boobies. So out of the scale of 1 to 10 Bourbon Street Halloween, not as good as Mardi Gras titties, what would you give the Houses of Mike?
The house is October, Bill. Can't even remember the name. I would give it a 6 out of 10, I think. Five and a half out of ten. I think that it's fine. The idea is actually, I think, probably the strongest part of it. The idea of searching for something like that should be forbidden or that you shouldn't find. It's kind of got like that snuff aspect to it as well that I think works so well for the movie Sinister, which we haven't ever done, but that would be a good one to check out at some point as well. You know, it has that idea of snuff that kind of floats around that I think is, you know, sort of like taboo. So I think the idea works really well. The execution, especially coming back to it again, is not as good. Because it does suffer from a lot of the same things that most found footage films do. There's a lot of tepid, boring dialogue that's like just there for no reason because it has to fill time, because you can't have 90-minute found footage movie of just fucking action. So you got to have it. You got to build the atmosphere, and building the atmosphere is often, because of the reality of it, often relegated to just shit dialogue or improv dialogue that really doesn't do anything for you for probably the first 50 minutes of the movie. I like the idea of going to haunted houses and having haunted houses in this movie. The problem is that when it actually gets down to it, it doesn't do a really good job of showing you those haunted houses, because it has that found footage element to it too, so you don't really get to see the haunts that much. I like the idea of the Halloween element, like, you know, counting down towards Halloween. Again, it's not like a super Halloween type movie. There's not a lot of like decorations. There's a couple decorations and stuff, but not too much. Film's not overall that like scary or creepy. And I do think that the film needed that retcon at the end to say like, hey, this was all an extreme haunt. Be careful what you wish for, sort of thing at the end, to really set up the theme about McKamey Manor that it obviously wants to have. I think going the distance and actually having it be the slasher or snuff movie where they actually get killed at the end, or seem to get killed at the end, it doesn't really surprise. It's just, you know, expected, I guess, at the end of this movie. And because it ends like that, you're just kind of left with like an empty feeling of like, oh yeah, okay, I knew that was going to happen. So, you know, it's just kind of like end and move on. So I think it's okay. I think like when paired with the second movie, it actually works a little bit better as an idea. But as a standalone, I'll give it a 5.5.
I guess I'll be more in the Halloween spirit. I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
I do like the idea. I do think it's a solid idea. I do think the film does suffer from a lot of found footage shortfalls that you did mention. Like, it's too rote, it's too really short, and the dialogue is very just tepid and kind of boring and ancillary. And the characters, like the 5 characters that we have, for the most part, God forbid, outside of Brandy and Zach, I couldn't fucking be... I'd have to think kind of hard about what, like, who they are and what they do, because they're so just tepid and just there. I do like the idea of, like, exploring and see, like, haunted houses and what can be the most extreme kind of into that. I think it would have worked better if we did get to see more of that. Less time on the, like, the RV and them discussing chasing it. And actually, because we only get to see 2 or 3, you know, of these haunted houses, kind of get to see, you know, more like these different type of haunted houses, I think would make it more effective and kind of cooler and more, especially more nostalgic too. Because depending on the type of haunted houses that you would see as a kid, I think that would make it a lot better. I do think it's a shortcoming. I also think a shortcoming is the fact that the film is very... It's not really scary at all. I do like the fact that it does take, like Creep, take its time to really work up to the killing, in the air quotes, of what's going on. Like, it literally takes until the end to finally get there. I do like that, because it builds tension and we get to fully see what's going on with these characters. I just think if they spent more time, though, kind of, as you said, retconning the end, making it like it's an actual incredibly intense haunt. I hate saying that. It would be more impactful, because I think at the end, and as I'm looking at Wikipedia too, you're right, like the sequel, they survive, so
But at the end of this, to make it feel like they're being buried alive and that's it, and that's the end, and that's the end of it, is really shallow, because it kind of... It's something that you, like, there's no stakes there. You know something, either something bad's going to happen, or you have to flip it on its head. And I think the fact that they went with the straight, like, something bad happened is definitely damning, because it's not nearly as impactful. You don't, by the end of this film, you're like, okay, I watched this movie, it's interesting, but there's no stakes that I give a shit about, so.
But I do, like I said, I do like it. And I think the part of it too is the fact that this film, again, and I find it really odd, because it says it was released in 2014. It's so goddamn mid 2000s, with like the how everyone looks and how they're talking and the technology. It's got like a sweet spot for me in my like freshman year in college. Oh, it's so fucking stupid. Yeah, no, 6 out of 10. I think it's a better found footage film, because found footage films are really hard to do. You have to be really concentrated and really quick. And I do think it does it enough. I just think the ending bastardized it a little bit.
Yeah. All right, so we got a lot more episodes coming up, because we got 9 weeks of Halloween this year through September and October. One of those weeks is going to be taken up by Saw 10, just so you know. Which it is in itself, even though it's technically not going to be a Halloween movie.
So Chester Bedingfield's coming back.
Oh, God. Yeah, technically it's not a Halloween movie, but we're covering it because Saw in itself is a Halloween series, because they fucking always release those for Halloween. Actually, this year, Saw 10 releasing at the end of September. It's a little bit early, I think.
Yeah, you said you were annoyed by that.
Yeah, normally they would release them in October. Like middle to late October, so.
Oh my God, Chester's been dead for 6 years now?
It's been a while, yeah.
Jesus. Feels like just yesterday.
But we got other stuff, too, besides Saw. We're going to cover...
Jigsaw?
No, we're not going back through the Saw series, sorry.
Saw 2... Saw, because again, like this, Saw 10 is supposed to take place between Saw, I think, Saw 1, Saw 2.
I know, we'll have to do our research, I guess.
God, I can't do it. I can't sit down and just like watch.
So, should we release the names of the movies, or should we just leave them up to
throw a couple of them out?
We're gonna do, we talked about this, but we're gonna do Hocus Pocus. This one.
Finally,
yeah. We're going to do...
Hocus Pocus 2.
No, we're not going to do that. I don't ever want to revisit that travesty.
And then we're going to do Hocus Pocus, the porno.
The porno one. Emphasis on the Pope. We also... we're going to do Terrifier. So, going to do Terrifier for that one.
I heard that.
Yep. And... I guess I think we also said this before, but Ernest Scared Stupid is one that we're gonna do as well. Fun one I have not seen in full since my early teens years.
God, Jim Varney's rolling over and it was great.
I know, he's disappointed that we haven't watched it in so long. Ernest Slam Dunk, of course, I've seen recently. Religiously, but so it's gonna be a fun Halloween season. I think we're gonna have a good time. Hopefully you continue to check back and see what we're doing for the Halloween season, for Halloweenies too. And if you want to follow along, you can subscribe to us on pretty much any podcast app that you can think of. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, our home base at anchor.fm/Spotify. Subscribe to us on there. Leave us a nice review. We are on Facebook and Twitter. You can search for us, Blood Black Run Podcast. You can like and follow us and do whatever you do on the social media apps. And we have an email address at bloodandblackrunpodcast@gmail.com. Get right to us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like.
what you want to hear us cover, and we'll take that into consideration. And of course, you can donate to us on our Patreon page, patreon.com/bloodandmicrobiome podcast. And whatever you can donate, we will put back towards beer. So thanks in advance for that. Hope you enjoyed our episode for Halloweenies 2 on the houses October built. And maybe you'll check it out this year for your Halloween festivities. And we'll be back next time with another Halloween episode. So until then,
take care.